You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Somebody knows. Scary clues in the disappearance of a gorgeous young daughter, just 20, who leaves odd traces behind before she seemingly vanishes from a roadside restaurant. That restaurant also tied to the death of a 21-year-old. Dad goes searching and finds her car, her wallet, her keys, cash, but no Keeslin. Tonight, where is Keeslin Roberts? Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us.
I dream about her being home already and us finding her. And I'm just holding on to that hope that we can bring her back home safely soon, whatever the situation, you know, is. There was one dream that we was waiting to go to a facility to see her. And she'd been found and that we were going to get to bring her back home. And then there was another one. It was just out of the blue. She was already back home with us. And it was just so good to have her. And I was hugging her and just, oh, it was just so nice for her to be back home and to be back with us again. And then I just wake up and then it just seems so real. But then I realize it's not.
You are hearing Keeslin's mom, Shannon, describing heartbreaking dreams of Keeslin being back home, and they're all a family again, and they're happy, and they're hugging each other, and then she wakes up, and it all just vanishes. Again, thank you for being with us in our search for Keeslin Roberts. Joining me right now, her parents, Eric Roberts and Shannon Roberts. You know, I'm thinking back how the whole thing started. And at first, the dad, Eric, thought her car had just broken down. Listen.
Not that something bad had happened. Maybe her car broke down. So, you know, I go to the location where I know she was staying. The thing is I own a trucking company, so, and I used to drive trucks. So I know what goes on these parking lots. They're not good things, most of them bad, but it's just peculiar for her to be there. At that time, I had no reasoning why she would be at that location or her car would be abandoned there.
Back to Keeslin's parents, Eric and Shannon Roberts. Guys, thank you so much for joining us because, you know, very often we hear about a missing person, we read the statistics, but we don't know about that person. And the more I find out about Keeslin, the more I'm convinced she would never have left her car at that roadside restaurant to be found the way it was willingly. To Eric and Shannon Roberts, what do you recall of the moment you realized, Mr. Roberts, that Keeslin had vanished?
Heartbreaking.
Yeah. Just devastating.
What happened that day, Miss Roberts?
Well, I was at work and Eric had went down there and he found our car at the Flying J. And he texted me and told me about it. And I was like, oh my gosh, what? And he's like, I don't know where Keeslin's at. We can't find her, you know. And so I was trying to text her and no answer. Her texts were not going through at all. And he was going to file a missing person report with Gordon County. And for some odd reason, they told him to go to Murray County. So he got with one of the officers and filed the missing person report. And he ended up getting her car and bringing it back home. And you know, we waited for days, you know, until we heard something, you know, from the law enforcement to begin, you know, trying to search for her.
You know, to Jason Jensen, private investigator, cold case expert, joining us, co-founder of the Cold Case Coalition, Jensen Private Investigations. Jason, thank you for being with us. It's called Routine Evidence. And this reminds me so much of another high-profile case of Gabby Petito. I spoke to her parents, and they both said she's got the mom and the stepdad and the dad and the stepmom who united in force to try to find Gabby Petito. And they were getting very odd texts from Gabby that didn't seem like her at all. For instance, it would be as if my son texted me and said, "Miss Nancy and Grace, I've arrived at school." That would not be from him. He'd say, "Mom, I'm at school," right? They were getting that kind of text and then no text. And that's exactly what we're hearing from Keeslin's mom. They text it back and forth all the time. So when Keeslin stops texting, they know something is wrong, Jason.
You're right, Nancy. That's a bad sign right there. I mean, given the fact that they can't find her and they can't find your phone, oftentimes there's evidence that's, you know, in that phone of the last persons that they were in contact with, if there was an intended or planned rendezvous or something like that. So that would be a prime piece of evidence that a would-be abductor or somebody responsible for her disappearance would want to collect and dispose of, so it's not available as evidence.
To Dale Carson joining me, high-profile lawyer out of the Jacksonville area, and importantly for me today, former FBI agent, former cop out of Miami-Dade, never lack a business there, author of Arrest Proof Yourself at DaleCarsonLaw.com. Dale, now, of course, a defense attorney would make hay out of this, a hunch, a feeling, and then strut up and down in front of a jury rail claiming that means nothing. But I guarantee you that any mother or father on a jury, when they would hear something like Mr. and Mrs. Roberts say, "She didn't text back and we just knew something was wrong." You know, I don't think there's anything more powerful than a mother's intuition, knowing the child, knowing their ways, their moods, their modes of communication. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. Moms and their feelings about particularly their children, you know, are very important, not only to jury panels, but to investigators. I can recall a number of occasions when mothers showed up at the FBI office and demanded we take an action, even though in some circumstances we were not under the laws prohibited, allowed to do that. But of course, the power of a mother often causes a lot of action among investigators. And of course, that's what needed to happen here, because the FBI has an ability to transit everywhere in the country in an instant today. And searching for a young girl is something that every investigator wants to find for their family and for the notoriety of having found the person.
I want to go back to Eric and Shannon Roberts joining us, and they'll be joined by Dr. Jory Crossen, psychologist and investigative reporter and journalist Connie Hall Scott. To Mr. and Mrs. Roberts, let me tell you what happened. So this was a couple of years ago when the twins, John, Dave, and Lucy, my children, were in the fifth grade. We found out, we got notice that their band, they played in the band, okay, she played a French horn, he played saxophone, had been invited to play at Disney in Florida. And of course, I was so proud, you know, my heart nearly burst out of my chest. They were going to get sent down to Disney to play on stage with their band. Well, it was immediately torpedoed by fear. How are they going to get there? We've never been apart before like this, with you in one state and me in a completely different state. And then I said, "Well, how are y'all going to get down there?" And they said, "We're going to take a chartered bus." I'm like, "That's a really long drive." And they said, "Well, we're going to stop at several rest stops along the way." And of course, I turned to my husband and said, "Over my cold, dead body." Okay. I followed them. Laugh if you want. Now, remember, that's when they were just 11 or 12 years old. I did not want them getting off a bus. And, you know, there's 50 children for the chaperones to watch. Wonderful chaperones. I was going to watch them myself at every truck stop where they stopped. And guess what? They stopped four times along the way. And they would all pour off the bus and go running in different directions, some to the bathroom, some to get food, some just running around. You're right, Mr. Roberts. Your daughter goes missing at a roadside restaurant, to put it euphemistically. You said in your comments that You have driven trucks and you know about roadside restaurants. Explain what you meant.
I mean, things going on there, it's mostly at night, but it does happen during the day. I mean, you got drugs knocking on your door wanting to sell. You got prostitution knocking on your door. But, you know, it's everywhere. It's happening now at rest areas, you know, the same thing. So, but, you know, a corporation that is targeting truck drivers to stop at their facility should be a safe haven. It should be secured. It should be guarded by guards patrolling the area.
You know, they've been called rest stops as a former prosecutor for many, many years. I've always called them arrest stops because everything you can imagine goes down at these, as they are called, roadside restaurants. You know, it's interesting how you thought something was off, you know, about the texts. To Shanna Roberts, this is Keelan's mother. Tell me about the texts.
She had ended up not texting us for a couple of days, actually, before all that happened. And so then when it had gotten that long, you know, we was really, yeah, that was not like her. I mean, she would try to, you know, when she was away from home, try to text us as often as could because she knew we would worry.
I mean, Keith would text both of us. If one wouldn't respond, she would text the other one, whether, you know, she was needing money or gas money or something. There was never a day, I don't think, that went by that she wouldn't text one of us.
You know, I'm just thinking about what you're saying, texting you for money. Whenever something would come up, if she couldn't find one of you, she'd text the other. You were virtually, between the three of you, in constant contact. But then she didn't text. She didn't respond to texts. What prompted you, Eric Roberts? Because I remember one time, we didn't have cell phones at the time. My parents couldn't find me. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And they went looking for me. And amazingly, out of the whole Bibb County, my dad found me. Thank goodness. Broken down on the side of the road. He found me. I don't know how he did it, but he did. And I've never been so happy as when I saw him pull up behind the car. So what prompted you, Eric, to go out and physically look for your daughter, not just report her missing, not just call our friends and think, okay, she'll turn up. You went out physically looking for your daughter. What prompted you to do that?
I went out looking for her, went to her last known location where I knew she was at. Her car was not there. I knocked on the door. The guy says, well, her car's parked at the Flying J. So I immediately go there. I mean, because I don't see any point of her car being just parked there for any reason at all.
When Keeslin Roberts misses a very important appointment, her father gets a call asking if he knows where she is. He had been texting with her, so he went to where she was staying, but Keeslin wasn't home. As he's walking away, Keeslin's boyfriend says, I haven't seen her, but her car is parked at the Flying J truck stop. Mr. Roberts immediately knows this is not normal behavior for his daughter, and he heads over to the Flying J truck stop where he finds her car in the parking lot, locked. Mr. Roberts immediately calls police. His daughter is missing. On January 18th, Gordon County deputies responded to a 911 call at the Flying J truck stop in Resaca concerning a suspicious female. By the time deputies arrived, the suspicious female had already fled the scene. The suspicious female dropped a bag in an area of the store that is restricted for employees only. The bag contained a wallet, money, phone charger, and an identification card for the female who fled the store, Keeslin Roberts.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Somebody knows, according to those that are searching for Keeslin. Scary clues left behind in the disappearance of a gorgeous young girl just 20 years old, vanishing from a roadside restaurant. I saw a photo, Miss Roberts, of Keeslin, and it looks like she was a flag girl in school?
Yes. She was in color guard.
What is that?
Like where they do the formations along with the band when they do their performances.
Isn't it true that when the marching band plays at these big football games in that big stadium where she's pictured, the flag girls go out, they choreograph their own dances, and they do dances with flags, sometimes with flames, that goes along with what the band is playing. They're the flag girls, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how many hundreds or thousands of people would come to each football game?
Oh, tons and tons of people. Yeah.
So all of these people would be watching Keeslin out on the football field dancing, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Dr. Jory L. Crosen joining us, psychologist, former law enforcement, now faculty, St. Leo University, consultant with Blue Wall Institute. Dr. Jory, you know, this is almost like looking for a needle in a haystack because you don't have just your team. And she did this for several years in a row. You don't just have your team, thousands of people that show up to watch their football team, but thousands of people come to the games from the other side. Then you've just got observers that are not affiliated with either side. Thousands of people see Keeslin out on the field dancing.
Yeah, that's an ideal stalking ground. We've had other cases across the country where that's been the baseline where the person is observed and basically, I'll say, targeted. So that would be a good investigative point. I know there's hundreds of people there, but there's a lot of clues there also where leaving the car. That's unusual, like parents were saying. There's just a lot of unanswered questions here that the family still has. And I know they're looking for some kind of response as to, you know, what happened, how it happened, and then why it happened.
Now, this is unusual. Clues that are obtained by the way her car is parked. Listen.
Keeslin's father, Eric Roberts, told investigators that while he sent his daughter the money she requested, he had not heard back from her in 4 or 5 days. Keeslin's boyfriend said he had not seen Keeslin for a few days. Mr. Roberts indicated that his daughter did not normally leave her vehicle the way she did and that he thought Keeslin may be in danger.
Now, Keeslin lived about 15 minutes away from her parents, but the way her car was parked sets off alarms in her dad's mind. Eric, what was unusual about the way you found her vehicle?
99% of people cannot park straight, including everybody. But her car was vertically straight with the lines in the parking lot where it was parked at. It backed in. I've never known her to back her car in nowhere. Her seat was not set for her height. And it was just very odd.
To Jason Jensen joining me, Private Eye, cold case expert at Cold Case Coalition. Jason, you're a private investigator, but I would argue it doesn't take a PI to know that when people back the car in very often, if it's nefarious, it's because they don't want you to be able to see that tag. In this jurisdiction, vehicles don't have to have a front tag license plate and a back tag license plate, only a back tag license plate. So by backing in Batman style, nobody can identify the tag plate, right? Also, not only that, the fact that she never did back in that way, that is, again, routine evidence, evidence of her routine. And I don't know if this name is going to ring a bell to you or not, Jason Jensen. Tara Grinstead, who went missing and was murdered not far from this location. When I went to the home with her mother, we looked in the car and her seat, Tara's seat of her car, which she always kept completely pristine. You know those people, the car still smells new. Her car was backed up for somebody that would be 6'1 or 6'2. And she, Tara, always had the seat all the way up front. She was very petite. And her car was covered in mud. It didn't take a PI to tell me the last person that drove that car was not Tara Grinstead.
You're right. That's all the signs indicating that somebody else drove her car and dumped it there. You know, it was staged there and parked in such a way that would delay the discovery of her car. Now, for somebody else to point it out to Eric that his daughter's car was at the Flying J is unique evidence of its own. It's like, how did you know? But it was nice enough that it was said so that Eric could go find it. And at that point, in my past experience, I have taken DNA samples of the door handle, of the steering wheel, and in this case where the seat is set back, of the controls for that, to see whose DNA profile would last be the one using the car. And unfortunately, when law enforcement are the first responders there and they release the car to a family member, such evidence can be destroyed.
Where is Keeslin Roberts? Trust me, somebody knows. Joining me, an all-star panel, including Keeslin's parents, begging for your help. If you know or think you know anything about the disappearance of this young girl, Keeslin Roberts, dial 706-624-1424 or 706-695-4592. In addition to Keeslin's parents, joining us right now, Connie Hall Scott, investigative reporter, host, North Georgia Television, WDNN-TV's Talk with Connie. Connie, thank you for being with us. What can you tell me about this roadside restaurant?
Well, I can tell you that it's, you know, first of all, it's not well lit outside, and they do not have proper cameras outside. You know, and bad things happen there, as Eric said. It's a place where drugs and prostitution and who knows what is going on.
What, if anything, can you tell me about a 21-year-old that goes missing there? Caleb Smith goes missing there just days before Keeslin is last seen.
I think that there are so many similarities. Number one, the two both resided in Murray County. The two both were last seen at the Flying J. 2 days apart, they go missing, Caleb first. And also his car was backed in five spaces from where Keeslin's would be backed in. Both cars had their personal belongings inside the car, and I believe in the dashboard. Money, things like that were left behind. Not a cell phone in Keeslin's case. It was never found. Also about Caleb, he was found in February. He was naked and his clothes were never found. He was found in a marshy area, I believe about 5 miles from the Flying J. I have talked to all law enforcement involved, and everyone said that there's no connection. Maybe there's not, but that sure is coincidental, isn't it? And 2 days apart.
Well, let's get real. Jason Jensen joining me, renowned cold case expert, and Dale Carson, high profile lawyer. First to you, Jason Jensen, a coincidence? His car, he goes missing back in January. His car is found in a marshy area, which is kind of earth and kind of water. Very, very difficult for dogs to track back in there. So his body is found without clothing weeks after he goes disappearing at the Flying J roadside restaurant. And then shortly thereafter, Keeslin goes missing, same restaurant, her car parked five spaces away from where Caleb's was parked. That's too much of a coincidence for me.
I agree with you on that one, Nancy. The coincidences are really strange that in such a close parameter of time, two victims meeting the same fate is really uncanny. So there may not be a connection between Caleb and Keeslin as far as they know each other, but there must be something common between their, you know, the perpetrator responsible for these two disappearing.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. and Mrs. Roberts. Was Keeslin seen alive at the Flying J?
Yes.
Yes, he was.
Inside?
Yes, inside.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is there surveillance video of her inside?
We've never seen none. They say there is. When it first happened, things went on with Murray County was a detective that was on her case at that time, but never did get a copy of the video that people say that she was seen on the camera coming inside the store. Now, whether that was the time that she panically left the store, we don't know.
Did you say she panicked and left?
When she was caught, confronted by the manager in the area that was for employees only, she, you know, when she was confronted, she dropped her bag and left out the back door.
So the only thing that she had done wrong, in quotes, is she went in the employees only area?
Yeah, she was hunched down. What the manager says, she was hunched down behind a table or some sort of equipment.
I wonder why she was hunched down, like she was hiding.
Yes, like she was scared or running from somebody.
And was Caleb, who also went missing at the Flying J, was he spotted inside as well?
His camera feed is coming from the Denny's cameras, which Denny's has cameras inside their restaurant. He was captured on their cameras. Talking to one guy in particular back and forth for a few minutes, you know. So they've got footage of that. Of course, Gordon County took his case and not my daughter's case, so, you know, red flags raise up in that county to me, you know.
The only cameras they've got is over the fuel pumps. They have none where she is running out the back of the entrance where the truckers come in that direction. There was no cameras in that parking lot for the customer's parking lot or the trucker's parking lot. No lighting at that time was in the trucker parking lot, so it's completely dark out there.
Where is Keeslin Roberts? How can this beautiful 20-year-old girl just vanish outside a roadside restaurant, the Flying J, this very shortly after another 21-year-old goes missing there. Both of their cars parked Batman style, so their front tags, their tags to their car won't show. Very unlike both of them. And they're never seen alive again. Where is Keeslin? There is a $50,000 reward. 50 $50,000 reward for information leading to the whereabouts of Keeslin Roberts. Her family in torture. Tip line 706-624-1424, 706-695-4592. Back to Connie Hall Scott, investigative journalist, and joining us from WDNN. Connie, the fact that she was hiding in the employee's kitchen area, when we hear she got into a confrontation, a lot of people think, oh, she got in a fight? She shoplifted? No. All she did was she went and she was hunching down and hiding behind a piece of furniture in the employee's kitchen. She didn't take anything. She didn't cause a ruckus. She wasn't drunk. She wasn't on drugs. Nothing like that. She went and hid in the employee's kitchen. What do you make of that?
Well, I think she knew she was already in danger. Whatever had happened prior to that, it wouldn't be usual for her to go, and hey, I went there and looked, and I actually kind of peeked in that area, and it would be a good place to hide.
I'm also curious about potential phone evidence. Take a listen. Eric or Shannon. Shannon, was her cell phone also in the car?
No, that's one thing that we've not been able to find.
Well, do you know if the police have tried to triangulate where it was last used?
No, they've not done
that. Not really.
The only thing we've got.
Why?
Time passed. Wait.
I don't care if time passed.
Law enforcement tell them they don't have enough evidence to get a warrant to get the judge sign off to get it sent to her cellular phone network company.
Technical legal term, that is BS. Joining me, former Fed with the FBI, now high-profile lawyer out of Jacksonville, Dale Carson. How can any LE law enforcement say with a straight face, we don't have any evidence of wrongdoing? Her ID, her debit card, her wallet, her money, all of that left in the car. Everything. The only thing missing, her cell phone. You want to tell me a young girl her age is going to leave behind her prized possession, her car, and completely cut off contact with parents that she texted back and forth with every day, multiple times? I mean, even when she moved out, she only moved 15 minutes away from home. Okay? There's wrongdoing. I don't know what it is yet, but why not get the cell phone records, Dale Carson?
Well, it's certainly sufficient for an affidavit for a search warrant. So I don't understand that either. And the sooner that's done, the better off we are, because that will help us know whether, as you say, where the last communication was. If it was at the Flying J, then that's important. If it wasn't, that's important as well. And another point, you know, truck drivers, the Bureau was always concerned that serial killers could be involved with driving trucks all over the country, making them doubly difficult to locate and isolate. And that's one of the reasons that VICAP was established, to determine whether or not individuals throughout the country had similar methods of operation, MOs, when it came to homicide.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
This is an appeal to all the truckers across our country. Please help your fellow trucker find his daughter. 20-year-old Keeslin Roberts goes missing at the Flying J road stop, Murray County. It's exit number 320, Resaca, Georgia, 320. No one has seen Keeslin since. Again, truckers across our country, help us find the daughter of your fellow trucker. The tip line, 706-624-1424, 706-695-4592. There is a $50,000 reward.
We've got one person said that she gave her a ride one day.
And it was after she went missing, like the week after.
Do you believe her?
I hesitate because, you know, it's been so long, but there again, she's saying details about other stuff that Keeslin told her that...
That seems real.
Yes.
Was there a sighting of Keeslin about a week after she is last seen? Joining me, her parents, along with an all-star panel. You know, we just went through this with a missing boy, Sebastian Rogers, and there was a sighting at a rest stop up in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and the little boy that was spotted at the rest stop looks so much like Sebastian Rogers. Even his own father, his own biological father, thinks that boy is Sebastian. Now, law enforcement tells us they've tracked down the boy's mom. It's not Sebastian. Back to Keeslin Roberts, to her parents joining us, Eric and Shannon Roberts. Shannon, what can you tell me about this alleged sighting about a week after Keeslin goes missing?
Well, she said that this lady had said that she got a phone call from the guy that was with Keeslin, that she says that was with Keeslin, and he wanted a ride. So she goes over there and she gives them a ride. They wanted to get away from the place where they were at for a little bit. And then she said that they didn't have anywhere to go. And so she took them over to her mom's house. And her mom said that they could stay there for the night. Well, she said that this girl that she says that it, you know, is Keeslin, she said that she was talking about that she couldn't, you know, she was, didn't really, she couldn't go home to us, but she knew that we was worried about her. She said something about that she even wanted a ride to the Flying J to get her car. And it was just really bizarre. But, and she told, she says the girl that she thought was Keeslin, you know, says to her, she said that, she told her, she said, well, I'm not really quite sure if I can be able to take you to get your car, But she said, I'll just have to let you know. And then, of course, her mom ended up breaking, this lady's mom ended up breaking her foot. So she wasn't able to, you know, to take her, she said. And she said she never seen her again.
Do you believe her, either Mr. or Mrs. Roberts? Do you believe this witness actually gave Keeslin a ride? Or is she confused about her date or confused in general?
Well, I think I do believe her. I mean, from what she said about some things and stuff, it just seemed like it was Keeslin, you know, the way she was talking.
What about it, Mr. Roberts? Do you believe she actually saw Keeslin after?
I mean, there's another girl out there that's, you know, is a little bit shorter, a little bit heavier, but resembles, you know, her, that the law is familiar with. So, was this person that picked her up, you know, under the influence and thought it was her? Or
even just wrong about the date?
Yeah.
Is it true, Mr. and Mrs. Roberts, that you have not been able to get answers recently from the GBI? What can you tell me?
They're wanting to get aggressive with this case. They understand where we're coming from. And we've been in contact with them several times. Both of them have met me several times since both of them have took over the case. So I think something might be turning around with the new GBI in Murray County.
Connie Hall Scott, where does the case stand now?
That's really hard to say. I personally feel a lot of passing the buck has went on with law enforcement, especially in the past. Is it Murray County? Is it Gordon County? Now it's mostly GBI with Murray County assisting. I do not feel like it has been taken as seriously as it should have been. I don't think that I feel like they dropped the ball by not checking the car out, by not tracing her cell phone, and also by not reaching out or responding to the parents as quickly as they should. I think that there's three possibilities. Either she walked away from her life, never contacting anyone she knows, including her family, who she was close to and also depended on for funds, which is kind of shocking that no crime seems to have been committed. Number two, there was foul play by someone she does know. Or three, maybe stranger abduction. And I think it's really important that everybody works together to find out where she is and what happened. And as you said, somebody knows where she is and what happened.
To Eric and Shannon Roberts, Keeslin's parents, what is your message today?
We just want the truth. We want answers. We hear a lot of rumors and stuff. I mean, it changes from one moment to the next between people and places and scenarios. And it's just gotten so overwhelming. I mean, we want the real truth, and we want to be able to find our Keeslin to bring her home. And, you know, I'm holding on for a miracle, no matter all the things we hear.
Ms. Roberts, what has your life been like since your daughter disappeared?
Oh, gosh. Just a total nightmare. I mean, not having her home and not knowing where she's at, if she's okay, if she's hurting, if... It's just indescribable. We spend every waking moment trying to find her, to do everything that we can, to just to piece any pieces together, to find anything that could put us on the right track.
Let me remind everyone, there is a $50,000 reward for information related to the location of this girl, Keeslin Roberts. Tip line, 706-624-1424. 706-695-4592. We stop and we remember American hero Captain Miguel Nava, Pine Valley, California, just 28. Captain Nava passed away with four other Marines in a helicopter this past February, awarded Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, National Defense Service Medal, Sea Service Deployment Ribbon. Survived by a grieving wife, Ryan, and a five-month-old son, Luca, and parents, Javier and Lisa. American hero, Miguel Nava. thank you to our guests and everyone joining together tonight to find Keeslin. Nancy Gray signing off. Good night, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.